Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Today, the first of a great two-part documentary on how government propaganda lies us into war, with the able assistance of the corporate-controlled news media. The film is called War Made Easy. It features commentators Sean Penn and Norman Salamon, and a raft of great news footage from 1960 to almost the present. I hope you'll stay tuned. The Media Education Foundation released War Made Easy in 2007. A British anti-war group has made the film available on its website, www.makewarshistory.org.uk. I was born in 1950. I don't believe that during those 60 years, 6 months ever went by when U.S. troops were not shooting thousands of people somewhere and U.S. pilots dropping bombs on them. We have been at perpetual war with somebody or other since, say, 1948, usually with some third-rate power who couldn't hurt the United States if they tried. The cost of this perpetual war has been ruinous. But perpetual war obviously has been in the interests of those who run the show. Wars need public support, though. To get it, governments unleash a barrage of propaganda on the citizens, with the eager assistance of the corporate-controlled media. The film War Made Easy skillfully shows how they did it and do it, from Vietnam in the 1960s to Iraq today. You see the culprits now pulling the same stunts, preparing us for near-future wars in Iran and Venezuela. The video is over an hour, and I've condensed it a bit. Today, we'll look at how propaganda gets citizens to support wars that, like it or not, are coming soon. Next week, we'll hear how propaganda keeps us supporting ongoing wars and vilifies those who try to end them. Many of the voices we'll hear are those of U.S. presidents. See if you can recognize them all. Johnson, Nixon, Carter, Reagan, Bush 1, Clinton, and Bush 2. Plus Henry Kissinger, Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, and Bush 2 Press Secretary Ari Fleischer, the guy who led the destruction of Helen Thomas in June. We'll start with a collage of old war news. The first two contemporary voices you'll hear belong to Sean Penn and then Norman Salamon. Here's War Made Easy.
The final United Nations victory has been won. The war is over. Peace is here.
The crowd of 2 million review the greatest parade of victorious arms ever witnessed. This is the news that electrified the world. Unconditional surrender of a new world of peace.
American infantrymen once again hit the road toward Korea's capital city of Seoul.
U.S. Marines were ordered into the Dominican Republic. As a rebel, meanwhile, the U.S. Marines have also taken center stage in South Vietnam.
This is what the war in Vietnam is all about. The
first wave of Marines landed at Grenada. Encountered some 1,200 U.S. Marines would land at Grenada for several days.
Bolivians were terrified during last night's heavy bombing raid.
Breaking story, President Bush's decision to neutralize Panama's General Manuel Noriega.
Saddam Hussein's reign of terror is over.
Of the war in Iraq.
Since World War II, we have seen a dramatic escalation in United States military action around the globe.
And as time went on, I began to wonder, particularly as I became draft age, about the truthfulness of the statements coming from the White House and top officials in Washington.
We fight for the principle of self-determination, that the people of South Vietnam should be able to choose their own course, choose it in free election, without violence, without terror, and without fear.
Rarely, if ever, does a war just kind of fall down from the sky. The foundation needs to be laid, and the case is built, often with deception.
In the background was the growing struggle between two great powers to shape the post-war world. Already an iron curtain had dropped around Poland, Hungary, Yugoslavia, Bulgaria.
It can't happen here. Well, this is what it looks like if it should. Chief of police is hustled off to jail. Public utilities are seized by fifth columnist editor who operates under a free press. He goes to jail too.
Fighters will account for some of the enemy, but some will get through to your home.
The use of propaganda to arouse public support for war is not new. Leaders throughout history have turned to propaganda to transform populations understandably wary of the costs of war into war's most ardent supporters, invoking images of nationalism and channeling fear and anger toward perceived enemies and threats. And in the United States since World War II, government attempts to win public support for military actions have followed a similar pattern.
That we are living in an era marked by the growth of socialism, its basic godless philosophy.
Lying. Dirty.
Its goal of world conquest.
Shrewd. Godless.
Its insidious tactics.
Murderous. Determined.
And its cunning strategy.
It's an international criminal conspiracy.
It's the same sort of message that's utilized today, and often identical techniques.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world. These are barbaric people, servants of evil, the cult of evil.
A monumental struggle of good versus evil. But good will prevail.
Whether it's the Soviet Union or Al-Qaeda, from yellow, it provides a way to legitimize U.S. plans for war.
On high alert from biggest...
You have the comparisons between the enemy leader and Hitler.
President Bush called Saddam Hussein a little Hitler again today.
We're dealing with Hitler revisited.
We don't get information that would help us put the images in perspective.
This mad dog of the Middle East,
I find he's not only a barbarian, but he's flaky.
The drug-related dictator of Panama.
And to support their claim that Noriega was out of control, ghoulish evidence of satanic practices with dead animals that one official called kinky.
Saddam Hussein is a homicidal dictator who is addicted to weapons of mass destruction.
And as Aldous Huxley said long ago, it's more powerful often to leave things out than to tell lies. For instance, quite often the U.S. government directly helped the dictators that were now being told must be overthrown. And it's that selectivity of history that's a very effective form of propaganda.
This selective view of reality, buttressed by these fear-based appeals, represents a larger pre-war pattern. The repeated claim that the United States uses military force only with great reluctance.
We still seek no wider war.
The United States does not start fights.
America does not seek conflict.
I don't like to use military force.
Our nation enters this conflict reluctantly.
And only for the most virtuous of reasons. First and foremost, to spread freedom and democracy.
We want nothing for ourselves, only that the people of South Vietnam be allowed to guide their own country in their own way.
The rhetoric of democracy is part of the process of convincing people that even though unpleasant things must be done sometimes in its name, like bombing other countries, democracy is really what it's about.
The United States has been engaged in an effort to stop the advance of communism in Central America by doing what we do best, by supporting democracy.
And it's almost as though repeating it enough times makes it so.
Our cause of liberty, our cause of freedom, our cause of compassion and understanding.
People want democracy, peace, and the chance for a better life in dignity and freedom.
We want to lift lives around the world, not take them.
These are forms of propaganda that are insidious because they tug at our heartstrings.
We must get the Kosovar refugees home safely. Minefields will have to be cleared. Homes destroyed by Serb forces will have to be rebuilt. Homeless people in need of food and medicine.
Of course we want to help other people. These are propaganda messages that say, don't just think of yourself. America can't just be selfish. It makes bombing other people ultimately seem like an act of kindness, of altruism.
Today, our armed forces joined our NATO allies in airstrikes against Serbian forces responsible for the brutality in Kosovo. We are upholding our values, protecting our interests, and advancing the cause of peace.
Belgrade's largest heating plant up in flames.
But even as planes of the multinational forces attack Iraq, I prefer to think of peace, not war.
If my motives are pure, then the fact that I'm killing people may not be too upsetting. As a matter of fact, it may indicate that I'm killing people for very good reasons.
America will stand with the allies of freedom to support democratic movements in the Middle East and beyond, with the ultimate goal of ending tyranny in our world.
And so you have kind of the high ground president with the lofty motives being proclaimed. We're told that peace is being sought, alternatives to war are being explored. And that's kind of, you know, the official story.
And I am continuing and I am increasing the search for every possible path to peace.
You have one chief executive after another in the White House saying how much they love peace and hate war.
We maintain our strength in order to deter and defend against aggression, to preserve freedom and peace.
No one, friend or foe, should doubt our desire for peace.
The United States wants peace.
We seek peace. We strive for peace.
Every president of the last half century has gone out of his way to say that he wanted peace and wanted to avoid war.
I pledged in my campaign for the presidency to end the war in a way that we could win the peace.
Even while ordering military action.
Well, no, I'd rather use a nuclear bomb. That would just be too much. A nuclear bomb, that would probably... I just want you to think big, Henry, for Christ's sake.
So you have this paradox, in a way, of the president who has just ordered massive military violence and lethal action by the Pentagon, turning around and saying, I want to oppose violence and promote peace.
I respect your idealism. I share your concern for peace. I want peace as much as you do.
Actually, war becomes perpetual when it's used as a rationale for peace.
We cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun, that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
As Americans, we like to think that we're not subjected to propaganda from our own government. Certainly that we're not subjected to propaganda that's trying to drag the country into war, as in the case of setting the stage for the invasion of Iraq.
Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Botulin, VX, sarin, nerve agent.
Iraq and Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda.
Iraq and Al-Qaeda.
Terrorism.
Cyber attacks.
Nuclear program.
Biological weapons. Cruise missiles, ballistic missiles.
Chemical and biological weapons.
Iraq has weapons of mass destruction.
President Bush has said Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Tony Blair has said Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Donald Rumsfeld has said Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Richard Butler has said they do. The United Nations has said they do. The experts have said they do. Iraq says they don't. You can choose who you want to believe.
The war propaganda function in the United States is finely tuned, it's sophisticated, and most of all, it blends into the media terrain.
The White House says it can prove that Saddam Hussein does have weapons of mass destruction, claiming it has solid evidence.
The White House insisted again today it does have solid evidence that Saddam Hussein is hiding an arsenal of prohibited weapons.
It's necessary to provide a drumbeat media echo effect.
They might fight dirty, using weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological, or radioactive.
There are ties between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda.
Anthrax, smallpox.
Dirty bomb.
Dirty bomb.
Iraq Al-Qaeda connection.
Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda share the same goal. They want to see, both of them want to see Americans dead.
And I was very struck by the acceptance, the tone of most of the media coverage as the sabers were rattled, as the invasion of Iraq gradually went from possible to probable to almost certain.
President essentially giving Saddam 48 hours to get out of Dodge. War now seems all but inevitable.
Short of a bullet to the back of his head or he leaves the country, war is inexorable.
Well, I think that's exactly right. War is inevitable, and it is approaching inexorably.
Is war with Iraq inevitable right now?
I think it's 95% inevitable.
You, at this point, right now, tonight, don't see any other option but war.
Do you?
I'm asking you, Ambassador.
I agree. I don't think there's a viable option for the administration at this point. We're way too far out front in this.
Send us over there, guys. Let's get on with it. Let's get it over with.
Showdown Iraq. If America goes to war, turn to MSNBC and the experts.
And in many ways, the U.S. news media were equal partners with the officials in Washington and on Capitol Hill in setting the agenda for war.
We'll take you there. MSNBC.
And although it's called the liberal media, one has a great deal of difficulty finding an example of major media outlets in their reporting challenging the way in which the agenda setting for war is well underway. And when that reporting is so much a hostage of official sources, that's when you have a problem.
U.S. officials tell CNN.
Bush officials says that.
Analysts say.
Pentagon officials tell us.
According to U.S. intelligence.
Often we're encouraged to believe that officials are the ones who make news.
U.S. officials here at the White House tell us.
They are the ones who should be consulted to understand the situation. If history's any guide, the opposite is the case. The officials blow smoke and cloud reality rather than clarify.
We will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
The notion that it will take several hundred thousand U.S. troops to provide stability in post-Saddam Iraq are wildly off the mark.
So the money's going to come from Iraqi oil revenue, as everyone has said. They think it's going to be something like $2 billion this year. They think it might be something like 15, 12 next year.
The country that can really finance its own reconstruction and relatively soon.
National security advisors Ken Edelman and Richard Perle, early advocates of the war, said the war would be a cakewalk.
The sources that have deceived us so constantly don't deserve our trust. And to the extent that we give them our trust, we set ourselves up to be scammed again and again.
There are reports that there is no evidence of a direct link between Baghdad and some of these terrorist organizations.
There are known knowns. There are things we know we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know.
Excuse me, but is this an unknown unknown?
I'm not.
Several unknowns, and I'm just wondering.
I'm not going. I'm not going to say which it is.
But Mr. Secretary, I'm right here.
In the run-up to the war in Iraq, the failure of mainstream news organizations to raise legitimate questions about the government's rush to war was compounded by the network's deliberate decision to stress military perspectives before any fighting had even begun.
We've got generals, and if you ask them about the prospects for war with Iraq, they think it is almost certain.
CNN's use of retired generals as supposedly independent experts reinforced a decidedly military mindset, even as serious questions remained about the wisdom and necessity of going to war.
My fellow Americans.
In 1964, President Lyndon Johnson falsely claimed that an attack on U.S. gunships by North Vietnamese forces in the Gulf of Tonkin gave him no choice but to escalate the war in Vietnam.
Renewed hostile actions against United States ships on the high seas in the Gulf of Tonkin have today required me to order the military forces of the United States to take action in reply.
Routinely, the official story is a lie or a deception or a partial bit of information that leaves out key facts.
In international waters in the Gulf of Tonkin, destroyers of the United States Navy are assigned routine patrols from time to time. Sunday, August the 2nd, 1964, the destroyer Maddox was on such a patrol. Shortly after noon, the calm of the day is broken as general quarters sound. In a deliberate and unprovoked action, three North Vietnam PT boats unleash a torpedo attack against the Maddox.
The official story about the Gulf of Tonkin was a lie, but it quickly became accepted as the absolute truth by the news media. And because of the press's refusal to challenge that story, it was much easier for Congress to quickly pass the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which was pivotal because it opened the floodgates to the Vietnam War. At that point, the facts were secondary. In the case of the Washington Post reporting, I asked more than three decades later whether there had ever been a Post retraction of its reporting on the Gulf of Tonkin events. And I called the newspaper and eventually reached the man who had been the chief diplomatic correspondent for the paper at the time, Murray Marter, and I said, "Mr. Marter, has there ever been a retraction by the Washington Post of its fallacious reporting on the Gulf of Tonkin?" And he said, "I can assure you it never happened. There was never any retraction." And I asked why. And he said, "Well, if the news media were going to retract its reporting on the Gulf of Tonkin, it would have to retract its reporting on virtually the entire Vietnam War." Fast forward a few decades, you have President George W. Bush saying that to an absolute certainty there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and that intelligence sources told him that clearly, which was not at all the case.
"Secretary of State Powell will present information and intelligence about Iraq's illegal weapons programs, its attempts to hide those weapons from inspectors, and its links to terrorist groups."
The failure of American news media to check government distortion reached new heights when, on the eve of war, the highly respected Secretary of State Colin Powell appeared before the United Nations to make the case that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
"Saddam Hussein's intentions have never changed. He is not developing the missiles for self-defense. These are missiles that Iraq wants in order to project power, to threaten, and to deliver chemical, biological, and, if we let him, nuclear warheads."
Today, Secretary of State Powell brought the United Nations Security Council the administration's best evidence so far.
After Colin Powell's speech to the UN, immediately the U.S. press applauded with great enthusiasm.
"Did Colin Powell close the deal today in your mind for anyone who has yet objectively to make up their mind?"
I think for anybody who analyzes the situation, he has closed the deal.
"This irrefutable, undeniable, incontrovertible evidence today, Colin Powell brilliantly delivered that smoking gun today. Colin Powell's outstanding today. I mean, it was lockstep. It was so compelling. I don't see how anybody at this point cannot support this effort."
"It was devastating, I mean, and overwhelming. Overwhelming abundance of the evidence. Point after point after point, he just flooded the terrain with data."
"It's the end of the argument phase. America has made its case."
"The Powell speech has moved the ball."
"I think case is closed."
But at the time, it was quite possible to analyze and debunk what he was saying.
Whereas the British press and other international news sources immediately raised legitimate questions about the accuracy of Powell's presentation, the major U.S. news media were virtually silent about the factual basis of his claims and near unanimous in their praise.
One of the great myths and part of the war propaganda cycle is way after the fact to claim that it couldn't have been known at the time that U.S. officials were lying us into war. And in point of fact, it was known at the time and said by many people who were not allowed on the networks, by and large.
One such critical voice belonged to MSNBC's Phil Donahue, one of the few mainstream media commentators who consistently challenged the official storyline coming out of Washington.
We're all now, everybody's righteous. What a terrible Hitler this is. We were mute when he was doing that. He was our SOB.
Absolutely.
And now we're sending our sons and daughters to war to fix that mistake. Doesn't seem fair to me.
Despite being the highest rated program on MSNBC, Donahue's show was abruptly canceled by the network just 3 weeks before the start of the war.
And a memo that was leaked as the Donahue show was canceled is very explicit. It said, we don't want this to be a face of NBC as the United States goes into war. This guy puts anti-war voices on our network.
The American people need to know there is no just cause for this war.
But there's no evidence that there is even a weapon that exists in that country yet.
We don't want to have that kind of public persona when then we'd be vulnerable to charges that were unpatriotic. It'll make it more difficult to keep pace with the flag wavers at Fox or CNN or whatever. And more broadly, news media are very worried, not only government pressure, but advertiser pressure, criticism from readers, listeners, and viewers. Gee, our soldiers are in the field. You got to support them. Don't raise these tough questions.
It seems to me that the right thing to do for patriots when American lives are at risk and Americans are dying is to unite behind the troops until victory is won. Now, on this show, Buchanan and Press, we've had a good debate for 8 months on this conflict. But now it seems when the war comes, the debate ends. I think unity, Bill, is essential at this time, or at least when the guns begin to fire.
It's a very effective tactic, at least in the short run, to a large extent, to say, look, you've got to support the troops.
You're killing the troops!
And that's an effort to conflate supporting the troops with supporting the president's policies.
Once the war against Saddam begins, we expect every American to support our military, and if they can't do that, to shut up.
If you're pro-war, you're objective, but if you're anti-war, you're biased.
I must say, I was trying to think of something that would be appropriate to say on an occasion like this, and as is often the case, the best you can come up with is something that Shakespeare wrote for Henry V, wreak havoc and unleash the dogs of war.
And that is a tip-off to just how skewed the media terrain is. We should keep in mind that CNN, which many believe to be a liberal network, had a memo from their top news executive, Walter Isaacson, in the fall of 2001, as the missiles were falling in Afghanistan, telling the anchors and the reporters, you need to remind people, anytime you show images on the screen of the people who are dying in Afghanistan, you've got to remind the American viewers that it's in the context of what happened on 9/11, as though people could forget 9/11.
Where we talked to several people who told us that various friends and relatives had died in the bombing there, in that collateral damage. Nick Robertson, CNN, Kandahar, Afghanistan.
And we would just remind you, as we always do now with these reports from inside the Taliban-controlled Afghanistan, that you're seeing only one side of the story, that these U.S. military actions that Nick Robertson was talking about are in response to a terrorist attack that killed 5,000 and more innocent people inside the United States.
And yet, we know statistically, the best estimates tell us, that more civilians were killed by that bombing in Afghanistan than those who died in the Twin Towers in New York. And the moral objections that could be raised to slaughtering civilians in the name of retaliation against 9/11, those objections were muted by the phrase war on terror, by the way in which it was used by the White House and Congress, and also by the news media.
Thanks for listening to New World Notes, to part one of War Made Easy, and please come back next week for part two. NewWorldNotes.blogspot.com. Illigit to my non-carborundum, and ciao.